Overnight tonight. I'm not
sure. Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Look, if you hate cops just because they're cops, the next time you get in trouble, call a crackhead.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
Then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I had fully intended to start out today by talking about the successful extortion that is being engaged in by illegal aliens in Seattle. And I will get to that subject matter. But literally, within the last 30 minutes, I've found out about a sleazy deal that was cut between one of the Northwest major universities, Portland State University, to let these pro-Hamas protesters who seized control of a building and did a tremendous amount of damage to the library on the PSU campus. There was a deal cut by the less than effective president of the university, Ann Cudd, because Ann Cudd wanted a deal where the protesters or pro-Hamas, whatever you want to call them, the pro-slayer, group would be allowed to walk out the door in the dead of night at 1:30 this morning when nobody's paying attention, and that she had agreed ahead of time that they would face no criminal charges, which means they wouldn't have to pay the costs of the damage they've done. They would face no expulsion. They would face no penalties whatsoever. And even that generous offer was not accepted by the crazies running the library. But 50 of these so-called student protesters, and many of them are not even students. We're finding that out as well. It matches up with what's happening in other college campuses around the United States. They offered up a deal that I don't even think is legal, and it certainly casts a real cloud over Mike Schmidt's show. And Schmidt, of course, is this feckless guy who's been the DA for the last almost 4 years. The guy who refused to prosecute more than 1,000 people involved in the Antifa and BLM riots of 2020. And people were outraged by that. And the city suffered as a result of it. And now the only way that the university could have offered to the so-called protesters that they would go without any criminal charges whatsoever, because whether you know it or not, a university president does not control whether or not somebody is prosecuted. That is under the control of Mike Schmidt. And right now, Mike Schmidt, the DA of Multnomah County, this guy who has let so much criminal activity go by, this guy who has weaponized his office, he's gone after conservative protesters, he lets the liberal protesters and the radicals like Antifa and BLM go. This guy is fighting for his political life. I think that he's going to lose the election to Nathan Vasquez, and we'll have somebody better, although I don't have that much to like about Vasquez either, because Vasquez won't talk about what it is he plans to do. But if he can't be worse than Schmidt Show, as far as I'm concerned. Vasquez has got to be at least one step better than that. But let me tell you about this deal, and I'll give full credit to the NBC television affiliate, and that's KGW. A group of pro-Palestinian protesters who are occupying Portland State University rejected a deal early this morning that would have ended the occupation. Now get this, this is the key part. PSU President Ann Cudd said in a letter sent Wednesday morning to her campus community that she had reached a deal with negotiators representing the protesters inside the library. As part of the deal, and this is the key part, Cudd said she was assured that protesters occupying the library would vacate by 1:30 this morning. Now I think that was key for Ann Cudd. She wanted this to happen in the dead of night. She wanted this to happen under cover of darkness. She wanted to be able to escort these protesters out. And what she promised, this is the outrageous part. The university if the protesters have been willing to walk out at 1:30 this morning when nobody's paying any attention, when the police aren't there, when the media has gone home, the university guaranteed it would not expel, suspend, or file criminal charges against any students involved in the library occupation, among other concessions. So apparently there was more to the deal than that, and we'll see if we can find that out. I mean, we had already heard, and we're going to talk about it a bit later on, that the DA had told the police, I'm not going to prosecute these people. I mean, Schmidt Show is a liar above and beyond everything else. He was at a news conference on Monday night with the mayor, the PSU president, and the police chief, and others. And Schmidt said, well, we're going to look at all the evidence, and then we'll decide to whether or not to prosecute. He wanted to make it sound like he was actually going to enforce the law, which should be a regular expectation of anybody who serves as a prosecutor or a DA. But I pointed out to you on Tuesday morning, I said, this guy gave himself enough of an escape hatch to be able to say, oh, yeah, we've looked at the evidence and we haven't decided to prosecute anybody. That's what he wanted to do. What Angela Todd's going to tell us later on, Mike Schmidt said he would prosecute those who entered the PSU library with breaking and entering. We're talking felony charges, and they should be, given the extent of the damage that's been done at Portland State University, a publicly owned entity. So this is going to come out of your tax money to repair all this damage. And they had no business doing this anyway. I mean, a protest is now in day three, the takeover of a building, the physical damage, the fact that the university had to be shut down altogether. Sources said Portland police were set to clean out the PSU library this morning, clean it out of these dirty little protesters. But then Schmidt informed the police, I'm not going to prosecute anybody. So allegedly, the chief of police said, well, if you're not going to prosecute, we're not going to go in and clean them out. And you can understand why they wouldn't want to do that. I mean, just getting anywhere near these protesters is going to mean every cop is running afoul of what could end his or her career. They will be sued. They will be faulted for everything they do. So the chief just said, okay, if you're not going to prosecute, we're not going to clean these jokers out. And then we find out it was part of a deal with the PSU president who made the outrageous offer. You took over a building. You shut down a major Northwest university for the last several days. You did a tremendous amount of damage. And now we're going to let you go with no penalties, no penalties, no expulsion, no suspension, no criminal charges. And let me tell you the key part of no criminal charges. If you charge somebody with a crime, if you might remember the case a couple of years ago where a teenager set off a fire with fireworks that burned a tremendous amount of the Columbia River Gorge. But when he finally admitted his guilt, then the court could impose on him and say, you have to pay some penalties. You have to pay some of the costs. The fact that you're not going to bring criminal charges against the people who took over the building at PSU and did all this apparently deliberate vandalism, smashing of computers, vandalism to the exterior surfaces and the interior of the building, all of those costs, which I'm sure are going to run probably to at least six figures, the only way to get that money back is to say to the people involved in it, you've been convicted of a crime, and the judge can now tell you that you have to pay some of that damage cost. By no conviction, that means they don't pay the cost. It means it shoves the cost on taxpayers, including a majority of taxpayers who have never sat in a college classroom and probably wouldn't be out wasting their time standing up for a bunch of Hamas terrorists. They'd actually be in the classroom learning something. And PSU said, let's let them go. No harm, no foul. That's outrageous. Back in a moment, I'll give you the Northwest nonsense and a couple of thoughts there, and we will get to that story about the Seattle extortion by illegal aliens.
Talks, you have no choice but to listen. More with Lars.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right, you're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead fish wrapper or mainstream media bias.
Just look up the word impotent in the dictionary today and you're likely to find a picture of the elite leadership figures from Portlandia. A mob of Jew-hating activists took over a building at the downtown campus of PSU, and those in charge can only bluster. Pictures inside show a fortified occupation with expensive vandalism and graffiti. PSU President Ann Cudd declares, "We cannot allow continued occupation of the library." Yet Cudd herself invited this mob to set up their camp at the library. And the cops aren't much better. 2 days ago, Chief Bob Day threatened to send in his officers. But as of this morning, they're just standing by burning overtime. Day's boss, feckless Ted Wheeler, declared this a criminal act days ago. But Teddy is only months away from exiting his massive failures as mayor. Why should he change now? Soon-to-be unelected district attorney Mike Schmidt shows promise to prosecute the protesters is future faking. We know Mike's track record when he agrees with the criminals. And in this case, I think he fully agrees with the pro-Hamas crowd that took over the library. Meanwhile, PSU fails its real students, the ones who've had classes canceled, about 21,000 of them. Dorms evacuated, literally, and Jewish PSU students who say they were spit on and called Zionist pigs. And by the way, Portland's Jewish community hasn't said much of anything about this at all. And believe me, I made the phone calls. 21,000 students saw their education at PSU sidelined because of all this ineffective leadership. The takeover mob renamed Miller Library Palestine after a country that has never existed. And the way things are going, it never will. All these elite Portland leaders think if they just dither long enough, these criminals will leave voluntarily and without any punishment at all. In fact, PSU President Cudd tried to engineer exactly that deal, and it fell through. And what happened? A bunch of the people inside the library, likely the ones who did the damage, walked away uncharged and, at this point, unidentified. Well, hope in one hand and spit in the other one and see which one fills up first. Leadership by benign negligence at its best. The silver lining spotted by loyal Lars listener Nick, who wrote in and said, "Hey, Lars, they visited a library for the first time." That's a silver lining for these little snots barricading themselves in the PSU library. And with all the time to do their research at the library, they might just realize there is no such place as Palestine. That said, time to turn off the power and bring out the high-pressure fire hoses and clean off the steps and clean off the windows and then arrest them for burglary, trespass, and criminal mischief. And if they are students, expel them. There are plenty of prospective college students who'd gladly take these kids' financial aid and take their place in a PSU classroom. And a related email, Ron O'Brien writes in, "Lars, I'm livid over the protesters taking over the library. This is outrageous. This is not peaceful protest. Holding a building hostage and asking for demands, this is terrorism and should be dealt with accordingly." And Randy writes in, "Lars, when I first saw the news of the quote protesters breaking into the campus building, I flashed on 1938 in Germany, Kristallnacht, and the beginning of the Holocaust." And our question of the day, I'll get to that a bit later on. Now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now.
Well, I'm going to give the grill to D.A. Mike Schmidt show because I think he's got his dirty little hands all over this deal. PSU could not have promised to those student protesters, the ones who support the slayers of October the 7th. He couldn't have made the promise, or PSU's could not have made the promise without D.A. Schmidt's acquiescence. He said he would prosecute those who entered the library with breaking and entering. But then he recanted on that. And then the police said, "Well, why would we bother to clean it out if you're not going to prosecute anybody?" Then the chief called it off saying, "Why bother? Vote for Nathan Vasquez to replace Mike Schmidt." Randy in Ashland writes in and says, "Lars, I have to disagree with you on one point regarding proposed punishment for these protesters. I remember in school when one person acted out, the entire class suffered. Therefore, I say close the universities, cancel graduation, including commencement and all the parties. This type of punishment generates peer pressure to behave. Peer pressure is a greater force than authoritarian discipline, which only makes punished into martyrs. Deliver the diplomas to those who didn't participate in the protests, but denied diplomas to protesters in perpetuity. They can never graduate. I find that appropriate punishment for supporting terrorism while providing students who didn't protest their diplomas. Sweeping riots under the rug is the worst possible outcome, since that encourages even more lawlessness. Had violent protesters been jailed in 2020, none of this would be happening today. Signed, Randy. To your calls now. It's a Wednesday. It's my pleasure to be with you and serving you on the Radio Northwest Network. If you want to join the conversation, it's 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, be glad to take the call, 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And our poll on X today, I kid you not, this is a serious proposal from the White House. Should Joe Biden bring Palestinian refugees from Gaza to America as their permanent safe haven? I would answer that no, and it is exactly what Joe Biden is planning right now. That word came out late yesterday. Today's poll on X is found at Lars Larson Show, and it's brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Let's go to Weldon, who's calling in from Redmond. Hey, Weldon, welcome to the program, and thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
You're welcome, Lars. Thanks for being there. Hey, I got a good idea what we can do with these students who participated in these break-ins and stuff.
Great.
Why don't we put them on the terrorist watch list? if they were arrested, they go on the terrorist no-fly list.
I think that's a great idea. I mean, it would be one more consequence, because right now, one of the biggest problems we've got right now, Weldon, is they're not going to know who to blame for all the damage, which means a court could routinely say, you've done some damage, you're going to get a trespass, you're going to get a minor legal sanction, but you have to pay for some of the damage you did. By allowing these people to simply walk away, the university allowed that, the police allowed that, apparently the DA allowed that. That means they're excusing them from having to pay for all the damage that they did. And they could have had their protest without smashing computers, without vandalizing a building. That was just ugly anti-Americanism on their part. But now to let them go tells them you can get away with it again, doesn't it?
It does. But I want to make one more point. If there had been one Muslim had done this protesting like this and breaking the building, he would already be on that list.
And unfortunately, they're not going to do much of anything to them. They're going to tell them you got away with it once. It's an election year. And you know what? The people who are letting them do this, the university president, Ann Kud, the police chief, Chief Day, the mayor, who's a lame duck mayor, Ted Wheeler, and of course Mike Schmidt, the DA, but you can unelect him if you choose to. They all benefit politically, and the people they favor, like feckless Joe Biden. You're listening to the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show. Actually want to be at. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails in a moment. And I know a lot of people are hot under the collar about the deal, the sleazy deal that was cut by PSU with the pro-Hamas terrorists who took over a building on the PSU campus for a couple of days. But we'll get to that in just a moment. Nigel Jaquez joins me now, Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter from Willamette Week. You can find his stories at WWeek.com. Hey, Nigel, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Lars.
I want to talk to you about the troubles that the governor of Oregon is having, having blown up her senior staff and distanced herself from serving citizens with a fight over making her spouse an official part of state government. But before I do that, I will give you the opportunity, if you'd like, to say anything you want to say about this takeover by the pro-Hamas protesters on the PSU campus and the sleazy deal the university cut, tried to cut. To say, we'll let you get away with anything, you'll face no consequences, and we'll even do some of the things you're asking us to do. Any comment on that, or should we move right to Amy Kotek Wilson?
I have to confess that I have been so focused on the governor's story that I haven't done anything else, so I am totally ignorant of what's going on. I know there's a takeover at the library. I know nothing beyond that.
Yeah, that happens to me, too, when I've really focused on a story. There are times I ignore everything else, and I don't blame you. But this story that you've been tracking, and you've really done the yeoman's work on this, about how Governor Tina Kotek has now, well, she's trying to make her spouse an official part of government, not a salaried part yet, but an official part of the state government. And in the process, I think I would say she has blown up her senior staff who've quit apparently in disgust and walked away. And she hasn't been serving the needs of citizens, in my view, because I think she's distracted by her own personal problems. What's the latest we should know about that?
We put a story up late last night. It's in the print edition today that has what I think is an email that really gets to the heart of what's going on. And that's an email from her special advisor, Abby Tibbs, in February, where the, and I'm paraphrasing, Tibbs says, Governor, we really don't have a plan on behavioral health, mental health, which is one of the governor's top three priorities. We all know that Oregon is among the worst states in the nation at delivering mental health services. So Tibbs says to the governor, you know, 14 months in, we still don't have a plan. We need you to focus on this. And, you know, what I'm hearing from people around the governor's office is that the First Lady, Amy Kotek Wilson, by inserting herself into staff meetings and planning and policy meetings around that topic, behavioral health, has really made it difficult for staff and for the Oregon Health Authority to, you know, make the aggressive improvements that we need in this state. So what I'm trying to get to in that story is that by putting her wife into this role, the governor has put her wife's interests ahead of the public's interest. And I think that is what this story is about.
Well, and the, you know, Amy Kotek Wilson claims some expertise, but she's basically was a low-level social worker who worked at Cascadia Behavioral Health. She marries the governor, you know, this marriage they've got, and then the governor decides to, and I'm trying to figure out whether her wife said, I want to be involved because I am mentally ill, I do have an addiction problem, so I'm the perfect person to help design this, or whether the governor just decided, I don't want to deal with this, but my wife knows about it, so I'm going to farm this out to somebody the voters never chose and don't pay a salary to, and she's not accountable to the voters. Do you have a sense of which one it is? Did she just try to farm out the job she didn't want to do to somebody who couldn't get it done either, or what?
My perception is that the governor, all things being equal, thinks this is a huge priority and really wants to make it better, make a very bad, dysfunctional system better. My second perception is that Amy Kotek Wilson would really like to be involved, and that the governor has said, yes, you can be involved. And so that involvement, which she has green-lighted to a person who wasn't elected, who isn't accountable to anybody, who isn't, you know, in the chain of command like a staff employee would be, has created some chaos. And I think that's a decision that the governor made based on how her wife would like to be involved. I think that you can see that five very capable, very loyal members of the governor's staff have left that office. They haven't brought any new people in. So the office is, you know, operating at far less than capacity. Plus, and I think this is another really important point, staff raised these concerns for months and months and months. They raised them in all kinds of different ways. The governor had a clear choice to make. Do I listen to my staff? Do I please my wife? And she went with the wife. So what does that tell anybody else who might want to come and work there? What does it tell people, you know, inside and outside of government? It tells them that the governor's wife won and that you'd be crazy to take a job there.
Yeah, I share that. And the other thing is, Nigel, as you point out, 14 months in, if Amy Kotek Wilson, because of her own personal knowledge of mental health and addiction, because of her training as a social worker, was the perfect person to do it, they'd have produced something after 14 months. But if the proof in the pudding is they haven't produced anything, it sounds like Amy, because a governor could go to her staff and say, I need a plan and I need it in 6 months. And the staff could say, we will do that or we can't do it in that amount of time, but she could demand results. She can't, perhaps she can't. I don't know the nature of their relationship beyond the fact that they're married, but maybe she can't go to her wife and say, you got to get this done, and I need it done now. You can do that with staff. You can't do that maybe with your wife, depending on the relationship. And the other thing that I've never heard anybody, and I think it's important, and you tell me if you disagree, Amy Kotek Wilson has said she has been mentally ill. We don't know if she currently is or not. She has been an addict. Apparently alcohol, but we don't know if she still is, an active alcoholic, whatever you call somebody who's still drinking, or whether this is in the past. But I've shared with my audience that every time I've met somebody who's a recovering alcoholic, they say, well, I've been clean and sober, 6 years, 10 months and 3 days. They'll tell you to the time. So should we assume that Amy Kotek Wilson is still an alcoholic and that that's part of the problem that the governor is trying to address by having the state babysit her wife? Or is this somebody who really is a recovering alcoholic who's been clean and sober for some period of time? And is it important that we know that or don't?
I don't have any information on that. I have asked about that. I don't know. I think regardless of the answer, the outcome is kind of the same, which is that the state is making, has a clear plan on education. It may not be working yet. It has a clear plan on housing. May not be working yet, but we know what the plan is. We know what the deliverables are. We know what we can expect. Not true on behavioral health. And so I just think regardless of the First Lady's personal situation, this is not the way you govern a state, and it's not the way you tackle a complex public health issue that is a disgrace in Oregon, that delivery of behavioral health services where we're consistently 49th or 50th. I mean, that's a disgrace, and you should be taking it very, very seriously and putting your absolute best, most qualified people in charge of it.
Yeah, and is there any indication that any of this is going to change anytime soon? Because it sounds like you would have to be crazy to go to work in that office right now.
Well, I know that there are a lot of people who are encouraging the governor to rethink the position that she has taken, which is the position that caused 5 staff people to leave. I know that. The governor is going to meet with the press at 3 o'clock today for only the second time since this story started, which was back on March 22nd. I don't know what she's going to say. I hope for the state of Oregonians that she may rethink her position. I don't know if she's going to do that or not.
Yeah, or maybe she'll do what Kitzhaber did. Nigel, thank you so much. I appreciate you coming to us on this important story.
Take care, Lars. See ya.
You can find the story at WWeek.com. That's Nigel Jacobs, the Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter for Willamette Week. Coming up, we're going to get to your phone calls and your emails. And you're not going to believe what RFK Jr. said not that long ago about red state Americans. He doesn't have much use for them. You're listening to the Lars. Are you?
Broadcasting from his socially distanced bunker to yours. It's sanitized entertainment. Here's Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Let me get to some phone calls. I've kind of neglected people that way, but welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. It's a pleasure to be with you. And if you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, you go right to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. This segment of the show brought to you by 540training.com, concealed carry, home invasion defense, and personal defense online at 540training.com. As I said, naysayers go first. So, Jeff, thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network. What do you and I disagree about that makes you a naysayer?
Well, I disagree with you. And you said Ted Wheeler and all these people are benefiting by siding with these protesters. And I would disagree with you and say that every single person on the side of the protesters has lost in this thing, and that if you take an overall picture of the United States of America, there are very few people that support this type of activity and action. And those people that do support it are already radical leftist Marxists. So it's more likely that 99% of the people are going to view this from outside the lens of favorable, and you're more likely to sway voters to the Republican or conservative side because of this action than vice versa. There's not a single conservative or Republican or moderate in the entire country that is going to look at what Portland State has done or Fordham University or any of these people and say, hey, those guys handled this so well, I'm not going to be a Republican.
No, but Jeff, can I fine-tune? I may have said it inartfully, but what I meant was Wheeler, Biden, the rest, all benefit when PSU cuts a deal with the police and the prosecutor to let these people go. Because if these people were charged with the crimes they've committed, you'd end up with trials, you'd end up with negotiations, you'd end up with a lot of consequence. When they simply let them walk out the door, as they did, when the president of PSU even negotiates, we won't bring any charges, then what you do is you completely take away any consequence for what was done, and that does benefit them. I think Wheeler, Biden, and the rest will not benefit.
The consequence will be at the voting booth because...
Well, it will be there, but it can be in the courtroom as well. If they're charged with crimes and they have to be put on trial, and maybe even in most cases plead guilty.
Ed Wheeler would look more. If they were charged with a crime, then the 99% of us who don't agree with this would look at Ted Wheeler in a more favorable position.
Right.
But because he's not willing to charge them with a crime, the 99% of the people look at this in absolute disgust and horror.
Just be careful, Jeff, because you sound like you're a conservative like me. Not everybody thinks our way. There are a bunch of people out there, including the far left wing of the Democrat Party, and you're right. It is a Democrat thing, not a Republican thing, that say the cause of these young men and women is just, and we agree with it. But they would agree
with that no matter what. It's just like abortion, Lars. If Republicans really want to flip the script, then just say you approve of abortion and the Democrats will argue with you. Like, nobody in the world except for a
now
small
that, percentage you, of... You may actually be right about that, Jeff, but you're a good naysayer. Thank you for the call. Let's go to... hold that thought a second, Jerry. Let me go to Chris. Hey, Chris, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. You called with a kind of a complicated story. See if you can cut right to the quick.
Tried to buy a gun back in November, was denied, filed appeal to the state of Oregon. They found an issue with a record from 2006, got the expungement. Went through back in March. The Oregon State Police are continuing to deny. They're continuing to access that record. And they're stating that expungements in the state of Oregon do not restore your gun rights. Yet they failed to cite a statute. They say it's a federal statute, but they failed to cite it. I've actually talked to the FBI about this, filed a complaint against the state of Oregon, talked to Cliff Bence's office, talked to Pam Marsh's office. Nobody wants to touch it. I've talked to OregonGunRights.com. They have, a multitude of cases where they're exploring the same issue and preparing to bring lawsuit against the state of Oregon Police Department.
Good, because I think that's the only way, because you and I both know that buying a gun should be just a federal matter. Form 4473, fill it out, file it. The federal government does a background check on you. You should be good to go. But Oregon chose to insert the Oregon State Police and the state of Oregon, which meant that whoever's running Oregon politically can tell the state police, jam these things up. And there's not much of anything you can do except, I guess, take them to court.
Well, it's worse than that because they're not only that, but they're lying about it. They're claiming that there's a statute that makes it still a disqualifier, but they're failing to cite that statute. They're failing.
And you know what? You're getting the Trump treatment because the people charging Donald Trump with crimes know they're going to lose in the long run, but they know in the short run they can jam you up, and there's not much of anything you can do about it. And I agree with you. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Jerry in Idaho. Hey, Jerry, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Well, I have a little bit different take here on these college protesters. You know, we all keep talking about them, charging them criminally. What we should do is probably charge them civilly. What we should do is all these students that have been locked out of their campuses, you know, their libraries, you know, you can't access the campus unless you live on campus. What they should do is, I think, would be to form like class action lawsuits and sue the people that are funding the protesters. And not only that, also sue the individual protesters that are actually, you know, the 100, 150 students on the campuses, sue them personally for denying your education that you've already bought and probably paid for all.
And that's what I'd hope they'd be able to do. The one question now may be that the university has allowed all those protesters, the pro-Hamas types, to walk away, is even identifying those people. You've got the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show.
Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Look, if you hate cops just because of the cops, the next time you get in trouble, call a crackhead.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
Then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on the Radio Northwest Network. And I want to tell you, in the last 2 hours or so, we've learned so much about the, I think, nefarious double dealing going on behind the scenes after the takeover of a major building on a Pacific Northwest college campus, PSU. The takeover of the library building, it was held for a couple of days by, you know, people who'd criminally taken it over. And you saw authorities, the DA, the police chief, the mayor of the city of Portland, and the university president all saying, these people will be held to account, criminal charges will be brought, it's clear that a crime has been committed. But apparently that was just for public consumption. Behind the scenes, something entirely different was going on. And as a result, it appears that nobody's going to be held responsible. And the young lady who's brought out a lot of this is Angela Todd from the group that's called PDX Real, who joins me now. Angela, welcome back.
Thank you, Lars. You know, last night, Mike Schmidt said he was going to prosecute PSU protesters who broke into the library. And within hours, by this morning, he changed his mind behind closed doors. The mainstream media hasn't released it. Bob Day had directed the police to go break this up. And Mike Schmidt said, I'm not going to prosecute. And it's just completely doublespeak, honestly, like a lot of things with this campaign.
Let me make one correction. They made the promise about 11 o'clock on Monday night. Now it's Wednesday, so not quite 2 days have gone by, and all of these various figures said, we're going to hold these people to account. The DA stood up, and I pointed out to people that he left himself a gigantic amount of wiggle room by saying, we will look at all of the facts and we'll decide who to prosecute, which sounds reasonable, but I think he was leaving himself an escape hatch. So I don't think he wants to prosecute these people who occupied the library and argued in favor of a terrorist organization called Hamas. And he wanted to find a way out of doing that because I think Mike Schmidt agrees with these people, but he's also running for reelection. So he needed to provide himself with cover. But I didn't want to pull your punchline. The police had planned to clean these protesters out and put them under arrest this morning. That's what you learned, right?
Yeah. You know, liberal or not, Mike Schmidt has a duty to prosecute crime. Protesters have occupied and destroyed a public building. It's taxpayer paid. The library is completely trashed. There's not only paint everywhere. They've breached librarian and administrative offices. Who knows what has gone on with files that perhaps are confidential. They are smoking and doing drugs in the building. They've spray painted everything. They have trashed computers, broken screens, pulled fire extinguishers and security out of the wall. It's completely trashed. This is almost 200,000 square feet. It's 194,000 square feet. It's several floors. It is going to be unbelievable, the cost to get this back together. Not to mention, students who paid tuition aren't able to go to class and now have no library. You know, people are being threatened. They have weird shields and weapons. And as far as Mike Schmidt, this is the same behavior that he didn't take care of in the riots in 2020.
Yep.
It's just this big game about never prosecuting behavior. He actively engages in political prosecution, and he turns a blind eye with people that he agrees with. You know, we've also got restaurants that are supportive of this and sending them food. It's just unbelievable to me. And then we have the president, Ms. Cudd, of Portland State University, noting that she is going to give these students special privileges and scholarships and donate money to their causes.
Yep.
Because it's just, I don't know when Portland is not going to stand for this. This is a public library. This is a public building that is taxpayer somewhat paid. It's unconscionable to me.
Well, the fact that they would say for public consumption, we're going to crack down, we're going to get these people out, they're going to be charged with crimes. They do that for public consumption. And meanwhile, behind the scenes, the letter that President Cudd, you know, the philosophy professor was made PSU's president, the letter she sent out was just a list of all the things she was promising them. She asked them to vacate by 1:30 this morning, and it didn't say leave and you're going to be arrested, leave and you're going to be charged. It said just leave. We will offer you no expulsion, no suspension, no change of your status at the university. The university will not file criminal charges. Well, universities don't charge people. DAs decide that. And she said, in return, students agree to refrain from violating student codes of conduct as they continue to exercise their full rights to free speech. So go on with the protests. Just don't break the rules again. And as you said, this is her writing to her staff. I personally agreed to support faculty efforts to include scholarship and creative works related to Palestine in PSU's race and ethnic studies requirement, PSU's ongoing financial commitment to anti-racist work, a personal donation to the Middle East, North Africa, South Asia Student Center. We will continue to fund the anti-racism efforts. I agreed to meet with student leaders May 17th in the afternoon about remaining concerns of the protest. So she gives them everything they demanded and gets nothing in return, right?
Yeah, it's unbelievable seeing the quote-unquote parenting of Portlanders in terms of thinking, like, I'm going to incentivize horrible behavior and then wonder why I continue to get more of it. It's unconscionable. I can tell you that most people are completely outraged by this. People have had it. And in terms of the public officials not saying anything, it's not okay. I mean, we have three commissioners that are running for mayor. The mayor is the head over the chief of police. Like, why are they not speaking up and telling us what they would do as mayor? You know,
he is the police commissioner, and the folks who serve as chief serve at the pleasure of the mayor. Which means that if the mayor decides one morning to fire the chief, he can fire the chief. So whatever the chief is doing or not doing is apparently being done with the knowledge and with the acquiescence of lame duck Ted Wheeler, you know, who's going out the door in 6 months. And I think he wanted this whole problem to go away, and now PSU and the DA have allowed it to go away.
Yeah, and I want to say about our chief of police, Bob Day, that, you know, we had gotten information from police. We have insiders and whistleblowers all over that talk with us. And the fact of the matter is that if they go and they take arrests, they are going to get public pushback. You know, they are in danger of somebody saying they're being brutal. And then within 2 hours or less, they will be released at the jail because there is no political will at the district attorney's office to prosecute people for bad behavior.
Absolutely right. That's Angela Todd from PDX Real. We'll be back in a moment. Angela, thanks very much. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. it's Tom.
Because you can't get enough, Lars. Podcast every show at LarsLarson.com.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Well, if you thought that Joe Biden's push to make America go to EVs, that is electric vehicles, if you thought, well, it's already there, it's dialed in, they're going to make it happen, it's not. The wheels are coming off very quickly in a number of areas, and the latest information about how this is working out for one of America's biggest and most popular car makers, it is not working out well at all. And that indicates that I don't think you're going to see Joe Biden win this one. Joe Biden is going to try to push Americans and tell them you must buy an electric vehicle. You will not have the choice within just a few years of buying a battery-powered or anything but a battery-powered car. So let me get into the details in a moment. First, if you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it happens right here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, and I'm glad to take naysayer calls, I know there are fans of EVs out there who think they're the best thing since sliced bread. Well, naysayers go to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. You can send your emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. I try to answer every one of them. And then our poll on X, should Joe Biden bring Palestinian refugees from Gaza to America and give them permanent safe haven at taxpayer expense? News of this plan broke late yesterday afternoon. That CBS had it first, actually, believe it or not, even though CBS is not much of a news organization these days. Joe Biden is considering granting Gazans a permanent safe haven here in the United States. Now, I told you yesterday when this news first broke, I thought these Palestinians, so-called, from a country that has never existed and probably never will, but they are, in fact, disaffected, terrorist-minded people who occupy a place called Gaza. That's actually a corner of the state of Israel, but it's called Gaza, as though it's some kind of country. It's not. It's a region that has a name, it's relatively small, and its primary purpose seems to be to launch terrorist attacks against the country of Israel. So, Joe Biden says, we don't have enough problems here in America already. Why don't we import some terrorist-friendly Gazans and Palestinians? And then we'll tell them you have permanent safe haven in the United States. So if you bring them in as refugees, they are eligible for every single social service program in existence. And I'm sure they'd have a much nicer life in the United States, which is not very crowded at all, compared to Gaza, which is a tiny scrap of land that has about 2.5 million people living in it. It's literally one of the most crowded places on the planet, and it's desperately poor. I mean, to those people, I'm sure that coming to the United States and getting food stamps, welfare, subsidized housing, subsidized medical care, and everything else, as long as you're the best friends of the Democrat Party. So I would say no to the idea. You can vote on the question. You'll find it at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. But I've owned Ford motor vehicles before. I own a Ford today. And here's what's stunning, because, you know, when they talk about EVs and how they're going to be the future, let me share a dirty little secret with you. Ford Motor Company is currently making one of the, you know, most popular EVs out there. It's not as popular as Tesla, but they make the Ford Lightning pickup truck. Now, I've been following the saga of the Ford Lightning pickup truck for a while. And in fact, when they first announced it and they gave us what the price was going to be, I said, if you took the stripped down base model Ford EV, the Lightning, pickup truck, and it is built on the frame of the Ford F-150, one of the best-selling vehicles of all time in the United States. Pickup trucks are very popular in the United States. You'd say, well, that's almost guaranteed to be a very popular vehicle. If you took the cost difference between the EV version of the F-150, a stripped-down model, and a stripped-down F-150 gasoline-powered pickup truck, the difference in price was enough to buy enough gasoline, even at inflated Joe Biden prices, to drive around planet Earth four times. About 100,000 miles is the gasoline you could buy with the extra money you have to pay to buy a Ford Lightning pickup truck. But it gets worse. In the first quarter of this year, And I'll cite even CNN here. Even the folks at the Chicken Noodle News Network have to admit this is what's happening. Ford Motor Company has lost a lot of money on EV pickup trucks. The estimate is it has lost $132,000 for every single Ford Lightning pickup truck that it made and sold. That's about 10,000 vehicles that were sold in the first 3 months of this year. $132,000 lost. That's even with the government incentives, even with the government subsidies. Ford Motor Company is losing more than $100,000 on every single one of these that they sell. And you say, well, that's ridiculous. Why would they do that? Now, Ford Motor Company has its own EV division called Model Small E, and they sold 10,000 vehicles. By the way, a year earlier, Ford sold about 12,000 of these vehicles, the EVs. They are now down 20%. And can you figure out why? Because they're not very popular. For most people who want to buy a pickup truck, they want something you can fill a tank of gas, go a long ways, and quickly refuel it and keep on going. Model E, not so very much. Revenue plunged 84% to about $100 million, which Ford attributed mostly to the price cuts that they were forced to make. In other words, the reason their losses went up by $100 million is they had to heavily discount these dogs to get them to move off the car lot. The total loss for Ford, $1.3 billion before you add in interest and taxes. Or if you work it out based on the number of vehicles you've sold, $132,000 lost for every single EV Lightning that went off the showroom floor or off the dealer lot. The company says its intention is to have EV pricing actually cover the cost of building the EV within the next 12 months. So that's their goal. Their goal is to start breaking even within a year. Right now, they're losing $132,000 for every single one. Now, in 2023, the Ford Model E, that's their electric vehicle division, lost $4.7 billion on sales of 116,000 battery cars. That means on the average battery car they sold, they lost $40,000. It's a much bigger loss when you look at the pickup trucks, even though the pickup trucks are some of the most popular cars that they sell. And Model E does not handle all of the company's electric vehicles. Some are sold in the Ford Pro unit. That handles sales to business and government buyers. And, of course, the government is jumping in with both feet. The U.S. Postal Service, which is a government agency, is buying more than 9,000 battery transit vans to be delivered by the end of the year. They've got an order for 1,000 of the F-150 Lightning pickups and Mustang Mach-E SUVs. That's one of their global sustainability companies. That's also been ordered up by the government. And even though those EV losses, the CEO of Ford, Jim Farley, he said early this month that they are shifting their strategic version away from all electric cars to a brand new line of hybrids, which is just about what Toyota has done as well. The pure electric cars do not work. They don't pencil out. They don't sell very well. They're not very popular. And you lose money hand over fist when you try to make them and sell them, even with the billions that the government has shoveled into this. It's a bad idea, and American taxpayers should demand that it stops. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show. LarsLarson.com. He actually reads them. More with Lars right now. You've seen him on News Nation.
He is the worst president we have ever seen, period.
Now, hear him with Lars.
Politics and media has become like a form of silly sports fanaticism instead of the serious work of improving society.
This is the Chris Cuomo Perspective on the Lars Larson Show.
So I want to ask you about what's going on American college campuses right now. We have groups of students at some of the most elite colleges and universities in America who have chosen to take over parts of the campus, criminally in many cases, in name of a terrorist organization, Hamas, that committed the slaughter on October the 7th. What should we make of that?
Look, I've been very outspoken about this. I don't want to lump everybody in. There's some people there, maybe even most of the people there, are there to protest what they see as unjustified suffering in Gaza and unjustified aggression by Israel in Gaza. Okay, fine. It's a signature tool of the American democracy.
You're dancing dangerously close to these "some fine people there" comments of the guy you don't like.
No, Donald Trump. But we don't want to forget. We don't want to forget who said that, right? The man who never lies to you.
If you read the entire paragraph, you got an entirely different. But I could excerpt parts of, and I've watched a lot of your commentary on News Nation.
Just like when he made all those mannerisms that just happened to match somebody with developmental disabilities. It's how he always.
A guy he had never met, but okay, thank you very much for that.
But he'd obviously seen him because he mimicked him. And
Chris,
if you were as forgiving as anybody else as you are of Trump, the country would not be in the situation it's in.
But tell me this, when news anchors get it, I used to be a TV news anchor, they decided I had a face for radio, but when I used to be that, I would not have sat there and read a script saying a number of protesters have taken over a campus building in name of Palestinian rights. I'd say a bunch of people who hate Jews with a passion and want them all dead have taken over a campus building and demanded that the United States call a ceasefire so the Hamas terrorists can escape alive. That would have been the honest way to say it.
That would be fine. Well, it's not honest. It would be your opinion. What I'm saying is I don't think the campuses have handled it well. I think that these kids, I don't think these are organic.
That's protests. Like saying Bill Clinton didn't handle his affairs well.
Hey, by the way, remember the good old days when we thought that was the worst behavior we could expect from a president?
Oh, the horny hick from Arkansas, he was the best thing for talk radio.
Imagine that, and then you wound up celebrating a guy who was found by a jury to rape someone. In a closet.
No, hold on. If you're talking about E. Jean Carroll, he was not accused of rape. He was accused of...
Oh, yes, he was.
Now...
He was accused of rape.
We can go back and debate that one all day long.
There's no need to. You don't have to twist yourself up, Lars. The truth is enough. These kids are being manipulated on campus. There is a nefarious...
Oh, they're victims. Chris, I knew you could find a way to get them victim status.
Don't sound like them, Lars. I see you as a victim of incomplete ideas.
These are supposedly some of the brightest young men, women, and pronouns in America who are accepted to some of the most elite colleges, and you're saying,
they're little victims of
indoctrination.
I'm not saying they're being victims at all. You're saying it. What I'm saying is I don't believe these protests are organic. I believe that the Muslim Brotherhood and other dark actors
and George
using
Soros.
Social media.
Go ahead, say
using
Soros.
Social media. Maybe Soros. He has been accused.
He's funded three of them through his NGO cutouts.
I know, but it's when you say them. We have to do a better job of understanding the money trail. I'm not absenting him from responsibility. And when asked, he should answer. And it's not good that he and his son duck it, to be honest. But I believe that this is a much scarier thing than what we're seeing on campus. I believe that this is what Christopher Wray, the head of the FBI, was telling us months ago, which is that there are bad people who want to hurt us that are using what's happening in the Middle East to radicalize our own kids. That's what I think is going on here. When I see a bunch of white kids saying we are Hamas, you've got a problem. And it's not just a privileged elite problem. You've got a problem.
Some people call them useful idiots.
But I don't want to dismiss them like that. I think it's worse than that. If you can get the kids who are supposed to be smart to believe that a terror organization is a freedom fighter, what are you going to do with the mouth breathers in our society? The people who will believe anything. The people who believe things that are convenient and feed their anger at the state. Now you have a national
security. I know you're just aching for MAGA to take over a building, but that's not the way MAGA operates, is it?
Do you believe MAGA is a monolithic thing?
No, I don't think of it. No, but as
MAGA
a general group of people.
You mean like on January 6th when they attacked the U.S. Capitol?
That
oh, the attempted insurrection that was never charged as an insurrection. Come on, let's get back to campus. And let me ask you this, Chris.
I never said it was an insurrection, but it is amazing that you would forgive that but get upset about them taking over a campus building.
Okay, but Chris, let me ask you. When this happens, you can say that the students are dupes. But supposedly people who run these institutions should have said, you've taken over one of our buildings. We, no matter what the cause is, we're sending the police in and we're having you arrested. And yet all the folks at Columbia until just recently have wrung their hands, clutched their pearls and sighed loudly and said, oh, we don't know what to do when a bunch of students takes over a campus building. Send in the cops with the flex
cuffs. They'd know if they had been protesting trans rights. If they had been protesting trans rights, they would have known exactly what to do. They would have thrown all the kids off campus. They would have thrown them out of school. They would have called the police. They would have done a lot of things because they would have cared about that a way they don't care about the anti-Semitism. And that's the truth that they are betraying with their own actions. I told you the campuses have handled it poorly. They have fed a lot of this radicalization. They fed it two ways. One, by allowing orthodoxy to exist where it should be a complete open and gray debate. They don't allow the debate.
Then, Chris, I have a suggestion for I hate it when people just say, well, we'll fix the problem. How about a specific concrete action? How about the United States Congress says, hey, Columbia, you're a private institution. You're sitting on a pile of dough in your endowment. Harvard, you too. And we're giving the two of you roughly $1.2 billion a year of the taxpayers' money for no particularly good reason. That money is cut off now.
I'm fine with it.
Good.
I am. I
love it.
I just don't believe Congress can do it. I mean, look at how they're now haggling.
Because the Democrats will oppose it, correct?
No, the Democrats will
oppose it.
I don't know that. What I do know is this. The Democrats passed their own version in committee of an anti-Semitism bill. And they had Republican collaboration on it. Johnson is desperate to keep his job, which I understand, and I don't think it's right that he has his fringe going after him, to be honest. He now wants to own this effort. So he's coming up with his own bill. So now you're creating a political football where you don't have to have one. So I don't trust Congress to fix it. I think you got to start with the most powerful people, who are the people, the parents. They should be pulling their kids out of these schools.
Agreed.
They should not be letting their kids apply to these schools. And then once we start talking about what to do, let's start with cost. You want to change the way they treat your kids? Change their ability to leverage all of us for hundreds of thousands of dollars, way more than the cost of living, way more than anything else goes up. Hundreds of millions and billions of dollars in endowments, and they still charge whatever the hell they want. Why don't you start there and start making them lower their prices? And then you'll see how they conform to what you want them to emphasize on campus. And instead of being a bastion of crazy, it'll be balanced, and you'll have debate, and everybody's welcome. Just like a university, universal truth is supposed to be about.
You can catch Chris Cuomo on News Nation, and he's the regular naysayer extraordinaire on the Lars Larson Show. Chris, thanks very much.
Always a pleasure. Best to you and the family.
Now, if you want to hear the entire interview, you can check out the download at LarsLarson.com. You can also find me on Instagram and other social media. And you're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
On the left coast. Get it? Here's Lars Larson.
Young men, and you young women too, I said, young men, you know what you should do. You should drop out of UCLA. They're tuition. You should not pay and cut. Over at PSU supports Hamas. She has no use for you. You can't stay there. Columbia and the rest, a transfer you need to request. It's It's time to drop out of UCLA. It's time
Welcome
to
back to Lars Larson Show. That's our parody guy, Jim Gossett. You can find him at Patreon and, of course, on our website as well. It's a Wednesday. It's my pleasure to be with you, and it's the Radio Northwest Network. If you want to join the conversation, it's easy. 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, we put you right to the head of the list at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And this segment of the show is brought to you by NickShivers.com for an instant offer to sell your home immediately. No showings, no hassles, and you pick the closing date. NickShivers.com for details. Our X poll today, should Joe Biden bring Palestinian refugees from Gaza to America as a permanent safe haven? My answer is no, but think about all the reasons. Number one, America has its own domestic problems that we need to resolve. We have people in this country. We have veterans who have problems that are unresolved. We have homeless who have problems that are unresolved. We have people who are drug addicts and alcohol addicts who have problems that are unresolved. We've got massive problems of our own, and we're told there aren't the resources to supply them with what they need. And then Joe Biden says, hey, why don't we bring a few hundred thousand Palestinian refugees? And we promise, cross our heart and hope to die, that we're going to make sure we vet them very, very well. How in the world would you vet people from a region in which 75% of the population supports the October 7th massacre by Hamas terrorists? They say, oh, yeah, we like that. And where Hamas is the elected local government of the state of, well, not state of Gaza, the region of Gaza, because really it's just a corner of Israel that's been marked off, walled off for the Gazans, the so-called Palestinians. So it makes no sense to do this. It is fraught with opportunities for more terrorism. Joe Biden has decided we don't have enough trouble in this country already, so let's import some from Gaza. I think it's a terrible idea. You can find the question on X at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com, and always brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Yesterday, I asked you this. Can a judge constitutionally gag a defendant like Donald Trump? And the answer is no. Well, my answer was no. 90% of you agreed with me and voted no. Only 10% of you voted yes. Here calls now. Let's start with Dave. And if you want to join us, it's 866-439-5277. Dave, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Well, I wanted to talk about the wokeism of PSU, but first I wanted to add something about what you said about EVs.
Yeah.
The batteries. You know, when it's cold, like in January or in the Midwest this winter, dozens or hundreds or thousands of those EVs were stuck because batteries, when they get cold, only hold about half the charge.
Yep.
And I know this for a fact. I go up skiing at Mounted Meadows. I have an RV with six batteries, and when it's below 20 degrees, there's no charge. There's only half the charge in the batteries.
Yep.
And that goes the same as for hybrids. And solar panels don't work at night or when they have snow on them. I have a solar panel on my RV, and it doesn't get any power from it when there's snow on it. But anyway, and also, if anybody calls the Cascade Policy Institute, ask for the October 13th presentation. There was a grid expert there that shows that the Northwest grid is negative 927 megawatts this
yep.
year.
And it's gonna get worse because the region had already said we're going to stop using coal-fired power. So they've shut down the Boardman coal-fired plant. They shut down Centralia
right.
1. But the region also gets electricity from coal that's generated in places like Montana and Wyoming. And they say they're going
right.
to get rid of that as well. And they don't have anything to replace it.
No, they don't. Anyway, back to the wokeism of these colleges. Hamas is clearly a terrorist organization. They hide in hospitals. They hide in churches. They hide in homes, and that's why when Israel goes after them, they end up killing innocent people. But these professors and people at PSU and these other universities are completely woke, and they should go broke, because nobody should go there when they're allowing that kind of nonsense. And Biden allowing these Palestinians in, how many of those are terrorists? And like you said, they can't vet them. It's true. You can't vet anybody from a country like that where most anybody can say they're anybody because there's no real ID card or anything there.
And not only that, Dave, but if you wanted to vet an American, you could do a background check through law enforcement agencies that are relatively reliable. If you called up the government of Gaza, you know, which is the Hamas terrorists are the government of Gaza, and said, can you tell us if this is a bad guy or not? Do you really think the Hamas terrorists are going to tell you, no, he's one of our guys, but we really want him on American soil. And we're glad that Uncle Joe is offering him a free trip to America and everything he wants when he gets there.
You got the Larson Show.
Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Look, if you hate cops just because of cops, the next time you get in trouble, call a crackhead.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
Then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a Wednesday, and it's the Radio Northwest Network, and there's a crazy plan to start scattering scooters, e-scooters, around the city of Spokane, and whether or not that's going to actually do any good for anybody or not, it'll be cute, I guess, until the vandals start throwing them in the Spokane River or something like that, which tends to happen to yellow bikes and a lot of other things. So I thought we'd check in with our friend Mark Harmsworth, who's the director of the Small Business Center at Washington Policy. Hey, Mark, welcome back.
Thanks for having me on, Lance. I appreciate it.
I gotta wonder about this because in some ways I'm a little more accommodating about things like the free bike idea, you know, with the predictable result that they end up thrown in the river. And that's happened in Portland. I imagine they throw them in Puget Sound and Seattle. And in Portland, they throw them into the Willamette River. And now they've put out all these scooters, or they want to scatter them around the Spokane Valley and other parts of Spokane, which is a place that in the wintertime is not the place I'd want to be riding a scooter. But tell me about what's going on here. Who's doing this? Why? And how much of the public's money is getting wasted?
Well, Lime is the company that's doing this. And kind of like you, Lars, I don't necessarily have anything against these scooters. If you want to ride one, knock yourself out. But when it comes at the expense of the public, that's when I'm going to get more concerned about it. So what Lime is doing is they're deploying e-scooters in Spokane Valley, in Newport, and they also have had programs in Spokane before with the aforementioned scooters that were being thrown at the Spokane River, which caused a huge amount of environmental impact. But the thing that drives me a little bit batty about what the scooter companies do is they talk about this as this great panacea of environmental help, where we're going to get the cars off the roads and we're going to reduce carbon output and all this type of stuff, the feel-good policies. And yet, when you actually look at it holistically, what happens is the scooters don't last as long as they're supposed to. They get placed all over the sidewalks. I mean, Seattle's even banned you wearing or released the regulations on wearing helmets. You've got some significant safety issues. The impact from being thrown in the river or just tossed aside. Everyone's seen these things in the ditches. And then the impact of the companies having to go clean all this up, pick these things up and charge them up every night to make it work. So it really isn't about commuting or reducing environmental impact. These are fun toys that these companies put into our city centers at the expense of the taxpayers' right of way, which the city has to provide for free.
Yeah, and as far as you know, is Lime taking any money from the government? Because this smells like the kind of thing that would get a big grant from EPA or somebody else.
I don't know specifically because we don't have records in their private companies. We can't see that. But we do see some of the grant money that's being spent by the cities on these companies to bring these scooters in. And the majority of the ride, they tout that they've had 2.5 million rides in the Spokane area over the last couple of years. And they talk about this, but most of it is just downtown fun rides for people driving around town. And, you know, they're fun. The scooters are fun, but they're also dangerous and they cause all these problems as well.
Well, and Mark, my take on it is beyond a toy, I would imagine that some people might find them convenient. If you work in a downtown area, especially, say, a place like Seattle, where there are a lot of hills, Portland doesn't have as many hills, but it can be, you know, you're walking from the Willamette River up. You can have a hill not quite as bad as the Denny Avenue in Seattle or some of those streets. But I would imagine that if you work in a downtown area and you think, I'm going to go up the street and have lunch, you might grab a scooter and ride a few blocks on it as being more convenient than, you know, grabbing your car out of the garage or taking an Uber for a relatively short trip. So it becomes kind of a convenience, but nothing more than that. In other words, the person who would get the scooter is going to say, I'll take a scooter because I'm going 8 blocks down the sidewalk and it's uphill, and I'd rather take the scooter than walk. But that doesn't really save anything because you wouldn't have used a car for that kind of trip anyway.
Yeah, you've just nailed it right on the head there. I think that is the majority of the trips. And when the companies say that they're replacing a car trip, they're really not, because you're going to drive. I mean, who's going to drive to Spokane in the middle of the winter on a scooter to work? I mean, it's ridiculous. So you're going to drive to work, and you might get a scooter to go 2 blocks in your lunch break. Or maybe pick things up, but you can't go shopping on them. You can't do any of this stuff because it's just too dangerous. I mean, these things zip along, as you've seen them, I'm sure. So that's the majority of the trips. So the carbon offset that they talk about is just not there. It's, you're replacing walking. And if you look at it from that perspective, suddenly these things become incredibly unenvironmentally friendly because they're being created themselves.
Well, and I got to tell you, the safety issue is not just a safety issue for the person on the scooter. And forgiving the, you know, the incidents of helmets and all that, it's, I remember one time I was working in television news, and I was working with a photographer, I like a good guy, Andy, and we were walking out of a downtown building, and he got clobbered by a guy on a bicycle. And I said, well, you're not supposed to be on a bicycle on the sidewalk anyway, but it happened to my photographer, who's a tough guy, so he didn't, you know, he shook it off. But he had a $50,000 TV camera on his shoulder at the time he got clobbered, and thank God that didn't get wrecked. But when you think about what happens, I'm not even sure what the law says about where these scooters are supposed to be. If they're in the street with all the regular traffic, then the scooter rider is at great risk. And if they're on the sidewalk, they're putting all the pedestrians, especially the older ones or the small, you know, younger ones, kids, at risk as well. You've got a, you know, 200-pound guy on a scooter who clobbers your 10-year-old son or daughter. You know, you can do some real damage. And of course, with cars, you've got to have liability insurance. I'm not sure how that works with scooters.
Yeah, on the sidewalks, incredibly dangerous. And I mean, I've had a couple of close shaves with them. I was down in Seattle just last week, and some guy zipped right past me. Looks like he was having a great time doing his carbon offset. But the rest of the time, if you put them on the road there, I mean, you're putting these scooter riders in with large trucks, and they're completely undefended. And they're even more dangerous, I think, than bicycles, because you're typically on a bicycle, you're prepared, and it's your machine. With these scooters, you can get on, you can rent one, and you've never ridden a scooter before, and you zip down the sidewalk, and yeah, you're presenting quite a danger both to yourself and to those around you.
Well, and in theory, the bike riders have to at least give hand signals when they're turning. But on a car, you've got to have working turn signals, a working horn, all these other things. On the scooter, none of that is present, and yet they're allowed to share the road and, I guess, the sidewalk at the same time. And are the cities listening to any of those concerns, or are they just saying, hey, this is popular, let's let it happen?
Well, in the case of Seattle, it's the latter. I mean, that's why they relaxed a lot of the helmet laws, because they were saying that you had to have a helmet to get on your little scooter, and who thinks about it when they get up in the morning? I must take my bicycle helmet with me in case I want to ride a scooter during the day. So they relaxed that law. So I think the cities see these as a way of improving their downtown cores, and honestly, all they're doing is creating a whole bunch of litter and danger to pedestrians and to road users at the same time.
And then we have to figure out, and does Lime end up paying the cost when you have to fish 250 scooters out of the Spokane River?
In that case, they didn't. It was local concerned citizens. I remember some of the environmental clubs that went in and removed those scooters. That was just 1 year. 250 scooters. And you know how heavy these things are. That must have been quite the effort to get them out.
never underestimate the efforts of vandals in this day and age, because they know there's no consequence. That's Mark Harmsworth from Washington Policy. Back in a moment.
Spotify, Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Google. Yeah, he's everywhere. The Lars Larson Podcast.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'll be glad to get to your phone calls. But in a moment, I want to tell you how taxpayer dollars are being used by a bunch of Democrats to go out and sign Americans up to vote. And if you say, well, Lars, signing people up to vote, that's got to be a good thing. Well, it depends on how you do it. If you're doing it with private money, you can do, I guess, anything you want. If you're doing it with taxpayer money, as they are in Arizona, and you say, we're going to organize this through college campuses, and they'll go out to sign people up to vote, encourage them to cast a ballot, etc., you understand this is a partisan enterprise. And then I'm going to tell you about the connection to a former senior advisor to President Barack Obama. But before I do that, let me grab a couple of calls. Let's start with Ron. Hey, Ron, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Two things today. First of all, I want to maybe get you to ask a question to Adam Schiff. You know that he got all his stuff stolen from him the other day.
Yeah, Adam Schiff, the guy in Congress who's now running for the U.S. Senate in California, his car was burglarized. I guess that's the right term, where when somebody takes stuff out of your car, and he ended up without his suit to wear to some campaign event. So he showed up in casual clothes instead. And usually when a liberal gets mugged or robbed or burglarized, they turn conservative. But don't expect that from Adam Schiff. He's apparently got a pretty good lead in the polls over Steve Garvey in running for the Senate seat that used to be held by the late Dianne Feinstein. And she stayed in it. I mean, it was going to become Weekend at Bernie's if they kept her in there any longer. Sad that she has passed away, but she was not exactly anybody's gift to American government. But yeah, he got hit. His car got robbed or burglarized, and he lost his suit and was forced to show up in a pair of blue jeans.
Yeah, exactly. I just wonder if you could get a mic over there to him today. I'd like to confirm whether or not he's still on board with you'll own nothing and enjoy it.
You mean the World Economic Forum nonsense where they say in the future you will own nothing and you will be happy about that? And apparently there are people who subscribe to that nonsense. I think it is nonsense. I'd love to interview Adam Schiff, but I might start with the first question would be, you said that you had absolute proof that Donald Trump was in collusion with Russia and that Russia helped him in the 2016 election. And yet after a very liberal Robert Mueller did a 2-year investigation at great expense to the taxpayers, about $40 million, he found that there was no that. And yet Schiff ran around after confidential hearings on Capitol Hill claiming he had proof positive of this. And then after the Mueller report debunked all that, all of a sudden his proof somehow disappeared and he stopped talking about it.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I believe they call it, you know, when you have evidence of a crime like that and you don't provide it, that's obstruction of justice. So he should be in custody. But my other thing is I just got done looking at the news here a little while ago, and maybe you could make some heads or tails of this. Breaking. Facebook interfered with U.S. elections almost 40 times since 2008. Now, using simple Democrat math, that puts that back all the way when MySpace and all that other stuff was out. I mean, so pretty much from the time they founded Facebook, they've been interfering in elections.
Yes, they have. And I think they still are. I think they're just finding workarounds, and I think you're absolutely right. Thanks for the call, by the way. Let's go to Charles, who's a naysayer. Hey, Charles, welcome to the program. We love naysayers. What do you and I disagree about?
Hi, Lars. I have a point I want to make about climate change.
Okay.
Okay, so I believe that climate change is man-caused by humankind.
Okay, why do you believe that?
Why I believe that? Because if you look at the sky and watch the chemtrail, you can watch the clouds being created, and you can see the dimming of the sun, and you can watch what's going on.
So that would cool us down, would it not? In fact, there are some knuckleheads who are suggesting that we artificially generate clouds to cool the Earth. So I don't happen to believe in chemtrails, but if you do, that's okay. If you believe that they're artificially generating clouds, the clouds would have a cooling effect, not a warming effect. It would reflect more of the sunlight back to space, and it would reduce the heating of Earth. So how is it that things down? Why wouldn't that be cooling instead of warming?
If you watch what's going on, you know, Bill Gates is involved with Canada now. They're coming out and they're admitting to running all these programs where they're dimming the sun, and they're working at cooling the planet. But
well, now that's what they're trying to do. But you're telling me, you started by saying climate change is man-made. Give me some evidence that man's activities on planet Earth are causing the Earth to warm up.
You know, that's the great deception. It's not warming up. They're trying to dim it down. It's a deception. And what they're doing is they're going to cause massive food shortages because the farmers are not going to be able to grow food like they used to because there's not enough sun.
That's assuming they could make enough cloud cover that the clouds wouldn't just naturally drop the rain and the skies turn clear again, right?
You watch a clear day and watch the chemtrails, because I was in the Air Force. Those are not normal, you know, what jet
condensation
thoughts look like. It's not.
That's how do you know?
True.
No, but Charles, how do you know?
Because when I was in the jet engines have not changed. They still burn JP4 or
JP8, any of those. Yeah.
Yeah, it's an improvement with a bunch of additives, but it doesn't change the fact.
No, but when you burn that fuel, depending on the temperature, depending on humidity, depending on the altitude, you either get more or less condensation that forms, ice crystals and eventually clouds, but usually ice crystals to start with. And then guess what happens to all that water? What happens to water almost anywhere on the planet? It evaporates.
I disagree. There is some of that going on, but not if you watch a clear day, watch the, you know, after the jets, they crisscross, they make X's, and then you watch the hazy clouds form, and you'll watch it. You'll notice a change in the weather almost immediately or within days, where the temperature drops.
Either immediately or within days. It's an interesting theory, Charles, but you told me that you were going to prove that or suggest that climate change is man-made, and then you told me man is trying to have an effect on the climate and is not apparently doing it. And the general belief on climate change is that it's making the Earth warmer. I don't buy that one either. Otherwise, you'd have to explain the medieval warm period where the whole Earth got warmer for a couple of hundred years before it cooled off, a long time before jet planes or contrails or anything else. But I appreciate a good naysayer. Back to what's going on in Arizona. And this is going to be happening, I think, in every state in America, and especially in those one run by Democrats. The Arizona Secretary of State, Adrian Fontes, he's the guy who took the place of the Democrat Katie Hobbs, who became governor in the election that she ran. He is now creating something called the Arizona Campus Voting Challenge. So a taxpayer funded event to try to get college kids out to sign people up to vote and encourage them to vote. And it's all tied back to Valerie Jarrett. It's an effort called All In that is part of Civic Nation, which is a left-wing nonprofit headed up by Valerie Jarrett, former advisor to Barack Obama. Just keep that in mind and understand your tax dollars are being abused to affect the outcome of the election. And you've got the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show.
/for a better us.
Political climate. He's the steamroller, This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. And one of the most consequential issues that Americans should confront this year, and in fact, I think Joe Biden should be forced to confront it when he finally comes through on his recent pledge last week that he's finally acquiesced and said he will deign to debate Donald Trump. Something that he'd been avoiding for months. I hope that one of the first things that President Trump brings up is Joe Biden's wide open border created by the roughly 200 executive actions that Biden took in his first 100 days in office. That created the problem. Reverting to the Trump policies would, if not ending the problem, it would certainly severely diminish the problem of illegal crossings into America. But it is a big issue for voters, and I wanted to talk about that with Chris Klemm, who's a retired patrol chief from the Border Patrol and a partner with Americans for Prosperity. Chris, welcome back to the program.
Hey, good to be on. Thank you for bringing up this topic. It is absolutely important for all Americans to keep discussing until we get it right.
Absolutely. And Chris, I've been talking about it for close to 30 years. And I remember having producers say to me, are we going to talk illegal aliens again today? And I say, yes, we are. Well, why? It's one of the most important issues in the country. And 30 years ago is a much smaller issue. Even 10 years ago was smaller under Obama when his Homeland Security chief said that even 1,000 crossings a day would be considered a crisis. Well, now we're at a roughly 10,000 crossings a day. So we've got 10 times the level of crisis. But would you mind telling my audience what the voters say when they go out and do public opinion polls about where they view this issue?
Well, I can tell you right now, the plurality of Americans are seeing border security and immigration as a priority right now. You know, this administration, as you mentioned kind of in the intro, took it upon themselves to single-handedly almost revert everything that was what I would say a culmination of the first 25 of my 27 years as a Border Patrol agent, the last few being a chief. This wasn't President Trump's plan. This wasn't, you know, Obama or Bush plan. This was Border Patrol agents' plan. This is something we've been doing and working on for decades. In fact, our agency is about to turn 100 in May, and or this month actually. So, you know, to see a political move be done strictly out of spite because the previous administration under Trump was getting it right is dangerous. It made us vulnerable. And as you mentioned, it's been a problem for a long time, but over the last few years, this has been a global phenomenon. This is people from all over the world. 30 years ago, that was right on the cusp of when I joined. It was mainly single adult Mexican nationals, some Central Americans that were coming here looking for work, day labor type stuff, farming. Now it's people from all over the world, from countries that don't like us. You know, the FBI director has testified twice in the last 6 months. Talk about how many bells and whistles he's been seeing going off. This is a national security issue. It's bigger than immigration. It's about border security. But we've got to, you know, I like to tell people that border security and immigration, they're not mutually exclusive. They're very related. But you can't have one without the other. You have to secure the border first and force people to come in the right way. And that includes will require Congress to kind of do some things to make some legislation to make immigration better and easier for America's benefit, but it starts with a secure border so we can keep America safe and keep the poison from coming in here and keeping the bad actors and the bad folks from getting in and let our agents do their jobs.
I'm talking to Chris Klemm, who's a retired Border Patrol chief and a partner at Americans for Prosperity. One of the things that gets to me is that there was a time where people would say, well, Lars, you're being racist when you talk about immigration. I said, well, I'm not talking about anybody's race. And they said, well, you know, it's mostly people from Mexico. And I said, yes, it is. But I remember a time when it was about 65%, as you said, Mexican nationals who are coming in. And many of them, I think, plan to come in, work, take some, you know, get some income and then head home in many cases. And that kind of reflected the old Bracero program where people would come in to do harvest and then return, except the getting got pretty good in America, and they were able to find jobs and say, well, what if I just stay and continue to make good wages, and it doesn't have to be in agriculture, it can be in a lot of different fields, but these days, we've got, what, 140 or 150 countries that are represented in the illegal crossings in the last 3 years?
Yeah, so I was the chief patrol agent in Yuma, Arizona, a section of southwest Arizona, southeastern California, about 126 linear miles of border, approximately 950 border patrol agents that I led across five stations. Mexico and Central America rarely made my top 10 daily, if not weekly or monthly countries. I had 116 and 117 different countries in my little sector, one of nine on the southwest border. You know, I worked in El Paso as the number two there, the deputy chief, where we were the same type of numbers, 100 different countries. It has not been a Central American or a Mexico problem in as far as where they're coming from. They still come in, but not at the level that they used to. And again, it's coming from countries, and I don't like to broad brush any country, but when you have people like 24,000 illegal Chinese coming in last year, and we've already topped that, and we're only 6-7 months into the fiscal year, that's a problem. And it is not racist, it's not xenophobic to have a secure border. We welcome lawful immigration for the betterment of our country, for our agriculture, for our economy, and we also want to help out those that have to flee for the right reasons, whether it's a refuge for war or they're being persecuted because of a protected class. But there is a right way to do it. Coming in illegally, jamming up the system, and having administration continue to allow that to occur is wrong for the migrants, it's wrong for the border communities, it's wrong for agents, and it's wrong for America. And this administration started it on day one, when he stopped the wall construction, when he stopped the halt of deportations, when he reduced detention, when he ended the migrant protection protocol, all the things that had been put in place that was making America's border safer and more economically prosperous for both countries. But most importantly, it was allowing border agents to do their jobs and keep America safe and reduce the threat. Unfortunately, the Biden administration did just the opposite.
Well, and the crazy thing is, Chris, Biden gets this insulation that no other candidate would get because he's old and somewhat demented. And I know people say, take that, you know, take it whatever way you want. But any other president who's taken the position, I don't want to do this through executive action. Well, you created the problem through executive action by taking 200 executive actions first 100 days. The Congress didn't change a single rule. They didn't take away any of the powers of the presidency or the powers of federal law. You did all this. So the reasonable question would be, if you created the problem by erasing these things, put them back. And yet you can't demand that of Joe Biden because he gives very few interviews and nobody seems willing to press him on the question. If you could create a problem with executive action, why won't you fix the problem with executive action 180 degrees the other way?
Well, first of all, it's going to be people like you and others that continue this conversation through election day that gets the American people riled up about it for the right reasons. But look, the Congress and the Supreme Court has upheld many of the authorities of the executive branch, and that is one that allows the president to do the things they do, number one, for immigration, but for the security of this country. You're absolutely right. There were a lot of things under Obama that we did for executive action that were better for the country when it comes to security. There was a lot of things that we did under Trump, very few things actually under Trump that was executive, but they got done. However, there were a lot of things undone intentionally by this administration, mainly out of spite, to stop directions, to stop policy priorities. And in fact, there's a soundbite that's going around from Secretary Mayorkas who very confidently bragged about it, to list too many of the Trump policies that they undid. And that was his quote. It's out there on social media where he's bragging about how they reversed everything, and now they're sitting there pointing the finger, blaming Congress needs to act. You know what?
Unbelievable.
Congress could have acted.
Chris, I'm up against the break, but that's Chris Plimm from Americans for Prosperity. You've got the Lawrence Larson Show.
Words from President Reagan.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us. We the people are the driver. The government is the car. And we decide where it should go.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be on with you on a Wednesday live on the Radio Northwest Network. A quarter century of serving the Pacific Northwest states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. And this segment of the show is brought to you by Oregon Medical Centers, the regenerative medical specialist, Oregon Medical Centers. Let's go first to John. We love a good naysayer. Hey, John, welcome to the program. And what do you and I disagree about that makes you a naysayer?
Well, because I don't think you push either the immediate plan or an ultimate plan to deal with these rioters. The immediate plan is, I think, the sheriff of Multnomah County deputized a militia of 500 people and go there and clean the place out and hold them in detention. And
they let 50 of them go overnight. How do you clean? I mean, there are still some of them in the library at the PSU campus, but the jurisdiction is City of Portland police are on the front lines of that one.
Well, I know Bob Day personally, and he's got his hands tied. He's a good guy that came out of retirement, thought he could do some good. And let the Multnomah County Sheriff can go in there with a militia that he can deputize. He's got the power. And if the mayor gets in his way or anybody else, he could arrest them.
Well, why does he need the militia? Why not just take his regular deputies in? That's what they get paid for, isn't it?
Because I'd like to see some community deputized. He's got that power, you know, right?
You know, John, that sounds, I mean, I understand, sounds exciting to you, but can I suggest that if you...
No, it's a solution.
Hold on, John.
The ultimate solution is...
When you say ultimate solution, what do you mean? You're going to write them trespass tickets, maybe burglary charges, and that's about it? And that's all that's going
to
happen?
I'd like to see this Soros compound get a visit from SEAL Team 6.
So you want Soros, who I don't like either.
He's an evil guy.
But I agree he's an evil guy. But you want a military, so you want to break posse comitatus and use the American military, SEAL Team 6, and send them in.
Hold on,
John, and you're going to send them in. He's an American citizen. I don't like it either, but he is. So you're going to send them in to raid the home of a private citizen based on what?
As far as I'm concerned, he's a terrorist.
Well, I'd love to be able to convict him of a terrorist crime. What is the crime he's committed other than shoveling giant amounts of money into organizations that pull stunts like this one?
Yeah, he pays for domestic terrorists here. It's very subtle, and he's getting away with it, but I think he needs to put a stop to it.
It's very subtle. It's the subtle kind of terrorism. John, you're an interesting naysayer. Let's go to Kenny. Hey, Kenny, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. I hope you can follow that.
Hey, Lars, thanks. You know, going along with the same subject, my daughter is in school there at Portland State. She says it's,
God help her,
it's more than trespass. Yes, no kidding. More than trespass, and the place has been destroyed. Computers smashed, destroyed. Graffiti, probably the library destroyed. Anyways, if that's the case, and that came from somebody that was at the school.
Well, Channel 6, to their credit, Coin News managed to get a reporter into the library and was allowed to walk around and take still pictures as long as they didn't shoot pictures of the terrorist supporting group. And they got pictures of all this destruction. So I believe the report that they've considerably destroyed the inside of that library. What do we do about that? And are you going to leave your daughter in that school?
You know, I really like not to. She's in grad school. She's on a path. It would be tough to change that. But, you know, definitely that's an option. Here's the thing, though. The administrator, the president there, you know, she offered them to walk away free. No prosecution, no loss of school status there.
And not only that, she offered to do a bunch of the things they wanted her to do. So she got nothing, gave everything, and they didn't even take that deal. They just, 50 of them walked away this morning.
Yes, and I'll leave you with this, and you've probably said this before. Imagine if these were conservatives that took over for some reason. Now, if the conservatives did it, they wouldn't destroy the building, and it would be for a cause like we need a border or we need crime control. So it would be a legitimate cause. But imagine how fast the feds would have been in on this, arrested them, and January 6th all over again. you know?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think that's exactly what would happen, except that we now have a political system that runs law enforcement, both at the federal level and to some extent at the local level. And you say, we used to only see that in foreign dictatorships, where people who are enemies of the ruling class in that country, in some third world banana republic, would find themselves in jail for nothing, and people who are friends of the ruling class would find their criminal activities completely excused. Except now, we have it in America, thanks to the capo of the Biden crime family.
Exactly, exactly. Hey, listen, I'll let you go. Thank you very much, Lars.
I very much appreciate it. Let's see if Fritz has it. Fritz, you called in about George Soros. We've got about a minute, so make it quick.
If they can drum up charges on Trump, we can't get racketeering on Soros. That's a broad charge.
Not till a new president takes office and appoints a new attorney general, because, Fritz, every time people ask me, well, can we get federal charges? Yes. The minute you can get Joe Biden's attorney general to bring charges against a lefty, yeah, that'll happen. But as we all know, that ain't going to happen. It's only going to happen with a new president and a new attorney general.
Well, I, the last caller, I think the bus should take a detour, and they should end up on a gravel road, not going towards the prison. Something's going to have to happen, because we've got a two-tiered system that is, it's so apparent.
The Lars Larson Show.